is Clyde List interviewing Lena Mansfield on August 1991 in her home in Sherwood, Oregon at 260 First Street. Okay. That way we don't get you mixed up with some. I've got a big long tape and I really had to listen to it to find out who it was. It turned out it was a hall snob.
Your dad and mother both came in the grocery store and he was telling Mr. Ferguson about when he lived here with his brothers. Uh-huh. The List brothers had a farm just beyond the bridge there. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and your uncle, one of your uncles lived there alone for a long time until he was gone.
Yeah, he didn't live there alone too long. You don't remember anything about their parents, do you? Not many people do.
I think so. When we had an account in the store, my husband and I owned a grocery store. It wasn't groceries, it was a general, old-fashioned general store in the building where the antique shop is now.
Oh.
And we had an account with your brothers, we called it the List Brothers.
Yeah, so you were the manager? And it was called Ferguson's. Okay.
No, that was not Ferguson's. That was Mansfield's.
It was called Mansfield's.
Uh-huh. My husband, Earl, and his brother put up most of the money. His brother lived in Camas. Uh-huh. But we had so many outstanding accounts that we wound up broke.
Well, I know the Risers up at Risers Market, they supported our family for quite a while.
Yeah, Earl Riser, when we came here and bought the grocery store, he worked for us.
Oh, I see.
Until he decided to have a store of his own.
Oh, he started out with you. And that was where the Smogville Antiques is. That's the building?
Well, that where the antique shop is and the two rooms this way,
yeah.
It was all we didn't have implements like Carlson Shirk did because we didn't have room for those, but we could sell implements.
What year was this?
Well, we came here in 1930.
Uh-huh.
And
where were you from?
I was born in Oklahoma, September the 19th, 1901. When I was 6 years old, we came out west, and we came to out of Seattle there. And my father and my uncle couldn't find work, and so my uncle, he hit on the proposition that they were giving the no man's land strip between Oklahoma and Texas that had never belonged to either state. They were giving people, you know, how they used to go out and take up a homestead.
Sure.
Well, my uncle heard about that, so he went back and took a homestead, and then we followed him. My dad used his homestead right, but we bought out another fellow, and there was a little cabin on it. My grandfather sold his place in Oklahoma, so he had a little money. A little money went a long ways them days. Well, it only, you see, there in that part of Oklahoma, it only rains once in about 7 years. And the grass grew tall and the buffaloes ate it when it was green and it stood there and dried and they ate it for hay.
Oh.
And so if they left it for letting cattle, herd cattle on the land, it would have been okay, but somebody had the bright idea of plowing it up and sowing it to wheat, and happened that the seventh year was that year, so they had a big crop. So everybody wanted to go there and get some land because we'd have a big crop. They never had a crop while we lived there. So my people decided they had to come back out here.
What year did you come out then? You said 1930?
I came to Sherwood in 1930, but I was 29 years old then.
Now, was this before the Dust Bowl?
Oh, yeah, before the Dust Bowl that you know of.
Yeah, before the Grapes of Wrath, you've probably read that.
Well, I was 6 years old the first time we came out west, and then I think I was about 8 years old when we came up. So that would be, see, I always have to take 1 year off. So it would, if I was 8 years old, it would have been 1919. No, I'm 19, that's when I got married. My folks and I had, we didn't own it, we just rented a hotel at the Ostrander, and we had Ostrander, Washington.
Uh-huh.
We had the, we took care of the food. We fed the workers for the sawmill. But back of the sawmill in the woods was where the timber was, but we never went up there. We just was in the hotel for several years, and then they decided they didn't want to be there anymore, so they bought a little place down by Kelso, and we were living there when my uncle up at Hood River wrote to my mother and told her that he could get her a job in a little sawmill at Underwood, Washington. So we went up to Underwood, Washington, and I was 17 years old, and I met my husband, Earl Mansfield, at the sawmill camp.
Mm-hmm.
And then that winter, when I was 18 in September, and in December the 17th, my mother and father and Earl and I got on the train and went to Kalama, and I was married in the courthouse. Not because I had to be, but because I was too poor to have a wedding.
This is 1919?
1919 I was married. Then in September that year, my little boy was born. And on 1987, he died of a very bad heart condition. His heart was going so fast they couldn't stop it. He was in the veterans hospital, and they got some medicine that would keep him, his heart on even space, and he came home here, and he was really good. He just get out of the car and walked in the house just like always. But the next Sunday, that was Sunday we brought him home, the next Sunday he got awful sick. So we called for an ambulance. They made arrangements for him to go to the Veterans Hospital. But the fellas in the wagon were afraid that he was going to die on the way, so they took him to the St. Vincent's Hospital. And they told us that they had done everything they could do and nothing would get him adjusted. So they asked permission if they could, instead of putting a pacemaker in his heart, they would open the vein in his neck. They said there was a little bit of danger doing it that way because some blood might get in his lungs. But we took a chance that it would help him, but it didn't do a thing.
What was his name?
His name was William Albert Mansfield.
And he died at what age?
He died when he was 66 years old in 1987.
And that was your only child?
That was a bad time with arthritis in her hips. She can hardly get around. I have quite a few cousins in Oklahoma.
Sounds like you've met a lot of people in your life here in the hotel.
Grocery store for different people that came to this grocery store. But Mr. Mason heard that they were going to build a new road through Shoals and come past the Six Corners. So he wanted to be at Six Corners instead of here, if the highway was out there. And there was no place for a store, but there was a little brick building that a man had built there where the service station is now. For he had a little restaurant in it, Well, that was the only thing that was empty any place around there, so Mr. Mason moved his store out there, and I worked for him till he sold it to Ferguson's. And I worked with Ferguson until I was 1970, till I was 70 years old.
The store was in the brick building?
It was in the brick building, but when Mr. Ferguson bought, he built the building that's behind the service station there, on the other side of the road, you know.
Is Jess Mason still around?
Jess Mason lives in Beaverton in a condominium.
I remember hearing him on the radio.
Yeah, he was on the radio. He still comes over here to get his hair cut.
Well, yeah, that's what
I see him once in a while, and he sometimes comes to the senior center to eat.
That's one person I liked.
It wasn't, I don't think it was different, but of course we were in the grocery business during the Depression.
Uh-huh.
So things were not so well, but the people did things together. We had, over there where the cannery is, there was some great big fir trees, and that was Sherwood's Park.
Uh-huh.
And we had the 4th of July there. Then the merchants all went together and chipped in a little money and hired a fella to run a show. And over there, just across the railroad track on that crossing, on, if you was going this way, on the right-hand side, it was empty in there. There was an old building in the bottom part, but the side hill there was just grass, so they took a lot of benches they had here and take them down there and show a movie every Saturday night. And all
this was outdoors.
And all the country people would come in to see the show.
And
they'd do their shopping, and that's why we were trying to get them here to do their shopping.
And, that was your idea, to show the movie?
It was a free show. Everybody come.
I've heard a lot.
Bowen, you heard about him.
Sure.
He most time ran the machine.
Do you remember people like Moorback?
Some kind of accident before I came, so I really can't tell you about that.
Dale, I have a picture of him as coach for the baseball team.
Died, and later on he married again. He lived in that house. When industries would come, we didn't have, in them days, we didn't have enough water or enough sewage to get the industries like the other towns around us did. But he was opposed to this being a big town anyway. He wanted it to stay the way it was. He wouldn't let things come in that could have come. That's why people were mad at him.
Oh, I see. Well, that seems to be a trend in Sherwood.
They took down the thing they put along the street to tie up the horses.
I remember the guy that did that. People never forgave him for that.
Yeah.
Well, that was Ralph.
That was why he took them down. I thought he just thought the horses wouldn't come to town anymore. But there was one year during the Depression, when people couldn't afford gas and they all brought their horses to town. That was during the Depression time.
Oh, you did? And that was
I don't know how, at least a couple of days we carried a lunch with us. And
did the train bring you right to Sherwood, or did you have
no
took you to Portland?
When we first came, my father had a brother at Oakland, Washington. Yeah, at Oakland, Washington. We came there for where he was because the car business, they had horses to draw big wagons to haul stuff, like when the train came in and all the groceries and everything. They called it draying.
Uh-huh.
And he had four horses, so Dad drove one pair of the horses and worked for him. But before he settled in Kelso, Washington, so he asked my folks to come there, and I was 9 years old when we came to Kelso, Washington, up around Kelso and Ostrander. And then when I went up to, we got automobiles in Portland.
Well, tell me about these things that everybody did.
Was nice. The American Legion built the hall, but the hall was only this front room where they have their meetings now. The part for the ladies was built on later. But they built the hall. Mr. Otto Ficken had the lumber mill where the used to be a hardware store lately. And he had lumber, so they built this one room for their meetings, but they had to earn some money to pay for the lumber. So they had this where the bank is now was a two-story building. And they had dances.
That's Star Hall?
I guess. Don't know what it was.
Yeah, they had dances up on the second floor.
The dances were upstairs, and the Fickens, they had a band together of people.
Oh, they did.
The Fickens were very talented with musical stuff.
First I heard of that.
Yeah.
This is the ones we know now.
Yeah. That was the Murals. But yeah. Fickens had this band, but the Murals played in it too.
Oh.
And we had Saturday night dances upstairs. And at one time, there was a rink downstairs for people with roller skates.
Oh.
But Van
Blankensop used to work down there. Showing
a little grocery store went in there. And Paul Van de Hey, who was working for us, he bought that little grocery store. And after that, Tom Kilpatrick bought that little grocery store. But then one time was going to fall in the street because the blaze was on this side. But the fireman propped it up so it fell back over, so it didn't burn anything but there.
You weren't afraid
to go in there, but I am not a tavern. I'm not a tavern person, but my husband, after he retired in 1953, because his eyes were so bad he couldn't work anymore, he went to the tavern every morning.
Every morning?
He stayed, he would want to know if they were open by 8 o'clock. If they weren't open by 8 o'clock, I would help him to go at 9 o'clock. And he would stay till lunchtime, and then he'd come home for lunch. And if I was not here, if I was working in the grocery store and not here, I'd leave him a lunch, and he'd eat his lunch, then he'd go back to the tavern until time to come home for supper.
Well, I've noticed, like, up at Six Corners, that's a group in
there's Seattle. Methodist boys go out there every morning for coffee.
Sure. I never see any.
These guys from the church don't drink. They just go to have coffee, and then when it's somebody's birthday, the guy who's having the birthday party has to furnish a cake.
That's Methodist tradition.
They just made it a tradition.
Mary used to Ken Blankensop.
Yeah. Well, that don't.
Somebody that annoyed you very much, or maybe made you laugh, or you were happy to.
Walt Bowen. He was such a nice man. He did so many things for the public, and he was always ready to help you out when you needed it.
Didn't he have a tackle shop over here in that green?
I
remember
in the 50s. Yeah. Okay. In this first part there, he had a little shop after he got out. He restored.
Sure.
Mrs. Shirk was a Moorback.
Oh, I see.
I might get that wrong. Maybe it's a Moorback with something.
There was a postmaster by the name of Fitch?
Fisk.
Yeah, I guess he's still around. He's important.
I saw the people that were kind of, well, just past being kids anymore, that I knew then are all gone.
Now, who was Doc Mansfield?
Don?
Dr. Mansfield.
Dr. Mansfield is no relation to our Mansfield.
Okay.
When he first came here, my husband was blind, and he had his bed there, and when Mr. Mansfield first came to be our doctor, he came to interview Earl to see if they could locate some place that they had, but they didn't make any connections at all, so they decided they were not related. My husband was born in Nebraska. And then one time I met a lady and they told her that my name was Mansfield, and she said, "Oh, I know your son." And I couldn't figure any way that lady would be acquainted with my son Bill. Then all of a sudden it dawned on to me, she meant Dr. Mansfield. So when I saw Dr. Mansfield, I said, "I was mistaken for taken to be your mother." And he said, "I would be proud to have you for my mother." And I said, "I would be proud to have you for my son."
Well, that's nice.
One of the little shops is there. Well, it's really where the laundromat used to be. That's where Woody started his little bakery store. And then I guess he got more business than the shop would handle, so he moved over next to where the flower shop is, where the grocery store is now.
I remember it there.
Yeah.
In there
someplace, they had a little bakery, and they baked bread every day and nice sweet rolls and different things. And the big corner working for Mr. Mason and some of the other ones that come and go, I had so many different people that I worked for because somebody would get tired of the store and sell it to somebody else. So I said, "Men may come and men may go, but I go on forever."
That's a good
And Mr. Woodhouse would mix up a stew or some kind of a meal, and he would invite us that were in the grocery store to come and have lunch with him. So we'd take turns keeping the store and going in and have lunch with the Woodhouses. The 4th of July and such a thing. What part is there by the railroad track? But all the rest of it back in there was big trees, and we had a little, like you build for baseball, you know, seats for people. And Sherwood had a good baseball team at one time. And the merchants went together and got things that they'd need for the baseball. And he was a little older than my boy. And my boy never got over how Mr. Voss hit Bud Voss, we called him, hit the baseball way up Washington Street. But there was big fir trees there, and it was real nice for picnics for the 4th of July and such as that. And all the country people would come in. And you knew it.
Then when they took that park out, that was kind of the end of this 4th of July celebration.
Well, the land and built onto the cannery, and my son never got over that. He says, "I went to war and they spoiled my park."
a lot of people were upset about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was no Robin Hood. There was no other.
Oh, festival. No, the no Robin Hood.
That started after the war.
Yeah.
Did you get people from out of town, or were they mostly town people?
Well, when we first came, it was just like a family, because my son was in the third grade, and he said there was one other boy and he that were not related to somebody else that was there. Everybody, you know, they didn't have automobiles. They just communicated with themselves in church and other things, and everybody intermarried. If they weren't related, really, they were related by some kind of marriage, you know.
We're talking about the 30s now.
Yeah.
People didn't move around so much.
Yeah. Not at all. A lot of people were born here and grew up and spent most of their life here until after the war, people began to go to other places and things. I don't think any mysterious person came in. It was just that the times that happened, because when the cars came, the people could go other places, and they weren't so intermarried, or they wasn't so, when you walked down the street, you knew everybody that was walking past you, and you just said hello to everybody because you knew them all.
How did you go to Portland then?
We had a Ford.
We
had a car then.
You know, you dressed up, you know. But when you went in a car, you just jumped in at any old.
The only place that sold clothes here at the time that I came, Carlson Shirt Store, it was on the corner down here. Uh-huh. They had everything. They had implements and hardware and groceries and dry goods and clothing. Of course, they didn't have a big selection, but then
they had what you needed, though.
Yeah, like the underwear and stuff, stockings and all them kind of things.
They could sell you anything from a car to something. What did it feel like you go in there? What smells hit you and so on? I mean, did they have a thing?
Well, I don't really.
Did you smell the furniture or the floor?
Old-fashioned store with everything you wanted. If he didn't want it, if they didn't have it, somebody'd be going to town sooner or later and pick up something for him in Portland.
Now, one thing I heard about, they would actually send people out to, you know, they'd pay you money to bring in your catalog so they could bring. That didn't happen here.
I never heard about that.
But did you ever order anything out of Sears?
Oh yeah, sure. Everybody ordered stuff out of the Sears and Roebuck catalog.
I ran across a old catalog.
After the war, everything was never the same again.
The war changed.
People moved around more, and more people came, and other people went away. And by now, there's hardly anybody left that I knew when I first came here. But I met a few of them the other day when we had the funeral for Marion Murdoch. Old folks were sitting around talking, and they said, "You kids, get out of here, go and play."
Oh, they wouldn't let you listen in.
But I remember one time in Oklahoma when I was just a little kid, I catch a bird, you can put salt on its tail.
Sure.
So I spent the rest of the day chasing birds. Never dawned on me that I could catch it anyway if I got close enough to put salt on its tail.
Oklahoma, I know my relatives.
15. When I after I was out of the grocery store, I started babysitting, and Mrs. Hales, do you know Rodney Hales and Mrs. Hales?
That name doesn't ring a bell.
Well, anyway, they lived machines. They were in the vending machine business. Well, then they had a little girl. She was just learning to walk, and I went to babysit where he was working. He never would tell her. He always said it was too awful to think about. But he said he'd never work for anybody else again. He'd work for himself. She had a little route of selling candy, like to the children in the Lutheran church, the school kids, and different places. And so then when he was out of their business, and so they were machines, and they want somebody to take care of their little girl. So I went to take care of the little girl, and she was the best little kid you ever saw. She just played all day, and then when she got tired, she'd lay down on the floor and took a nap, and I was just sitting there knitting. And so I went into the bedroom, and the bed was piled high with clean clothes that needed to be put away or ironed or something. So I sorted the clothes. Well, she sat on the bed, and she sorted with me. And then I took the ones that need to be ironed, his shirts and things, and ironed some of them. And then when she came home that night, she said, "Oh, mercy, you did so much work. You must be so tired you can't stand it." I said, that was not any hard work for me. I was glad to do the ironing. So from then on, I was their ironing lady. Now the little girl is in her 20s, and she's in Ashland going to college. I was going to tell you
about your 90th birthday coming up.
Oh, yeah. Well, she gave me a birthday party on my 79th birthday. She said, Lena, tomorrow is your birthday, and I'll take you out to lunch. So you bring along another dress so you can put on a better dress to go out to lunch. So I said, okay, and I got out of the car to go into the basement to do the ironing. I told Rod it was going to be my 79th birthday, and he never said a word. So I was ironing, and finally it got after lunchtime, and she came downstairs, and she says, well, it's time to put on your other dress now. So I did, and I went upstairs, and the house was full of people. She gave me a surprise birthday party.
Oh, so we're not going to talk about that then. We're
that was, well, it was a ladies' party, but my son was invited too, and Mr. Brownie, I know you know about Mr. Brownie, who used to be a rug man. He lived up Edie Road there, and he sold carpeting and rugs. He was kind of elderly, and his wife was dead, and the girls, the two older Hales girls would go up sometimes and straighten up his house for him and wash up his dishes and things. He was invited to my party too. Then one time when I was 87, Gene Voss really did this, but I had the whole church for a party. Everybody was invited to my party. And when I was 89, then she invited, she practically the whole church to her house for me, a party. So Lizzie Hales was visiting me a few weeks ago. She says, what are you going to do on your birthday? I said, I'm having a party. She says, well, you sound so sure about it. How you know you're going to have a party? And I said, well, if I don't have a party at church, I know Gene Voss or Carrie Richards will make me a party. Yeah. The Methodist coffee break over in the Oddfellows Hall every Saturday morning. So Carrie and her mother come and visit me quite a bit after the coffee break. And Carrie says, you better tell people that you're all tied up for your birthday. And I said, I've already given them notice that I'm having a party.
Well, that sounds like sis.
I have a lot of friends, and I don't even realize how I get my friends, but people just do the nicest things for me. Carrie got me this old rug and got some people to help put it down, and she gave me this chair, and she gave me that little love seat, and she's always doing things for me, and her mother does things for me too. And Christmas time, they gave me a whole lot of food, and I always know I'm going to be invited for Christmas.
Then a couple other questions sort of came to me here.
When we first came here, lived up Washington Street in the house that has the wall around it. That was 1930. In 1937, we moved to this house.
Who lived here before?
It had been a rental, and Joe Stewart, who was the barber, him and his wife lived in it. Then they bought a house over there, and they moved out, and Wagner's had the tavern on the corner, and they were going to buy this house. Mrs. Wagner came, and she cleaned it all up and then mopped the floors, and everything was just spick and span. And Mr. Wagner got killed driving to Portland. So then she didn't want the house, and we got to buy it. And I always told her I was so glad she'd cleaned my house up for me.
There had been a group of people.
Oh, there was a bunch came, and it was close to Christmas time.
Yeah.
And I went out there and just stood on the porch because I thought they were going to sing carols to me.
Oh.
And then when they had papers in their hands, I thought it was what they were singing from the papers.
Oh.
But they didn't sing at all, you know. They were just standing up there.
And
then when they started to move away, well, one of the girls said, we were surveying the old houses in town, so we were coming to look at your house. I told her I was waiting for them to sing to me.
That kind of brings back the item I read in one of the old papers about the Mural.
But then there are cliques. I mean, like our church, we have all kinds of things. Just a few weeks ago, we had a concert, and the choir sang to us, and we had some solos and different things, and we have lots of things going on. The boys or men at the Methodist Church, they buy a whole lot of tickets to the ball games, take the boys to the ball games, and give them free tickets and free peanuts, and they have good social times. And they have men's breakfast once a month, and we have women's society once a month. Then there are branches out from the women's society. Ruth is one, and Martha is one, and Sarah is the biggest one, because we were the girls who were working and had our meeting at night. And the other two branches, they have their meetings in the afternoon on Thursdays. Hudson Church, that
besides
was the biggest
one,
thing
yeah.
in town.
That was the biggest.
Then right next to them is the post office.
Yeah.
And then when I came here, there was a Safeway store in the corner where the flower shop is right now.
Safeway?
Yeah, but it just stayed a few months after I came here. They moved out.
Here.
Then it was different things. At times, when we first had the store, it's where the Mason Hall is now. But that was too small, so we moved over in the other corner. But there was a drugstore in there, one of those places there. Then Blankensop's had the variety store, but a couple of old men had it before them. And then there was a barber shop. Ben worked in the barber shop, but when we came, Joe Stewart was over on the other corner, this end of where the flower shop
now,
is that now.
The father of Marge? Is that a relative of Marge Stewart?
He had a couple of brothers. He was, I don't know how he's related
to
Marge.
Well, I'll ask her. It doesn't matter.
Anyway, well, she married one of his brothers. That's the way it is.
Oh, I see.
Because when you go out this way, where Four Corners is right out there, there was a little house right in that corner that says sold now. And Joe Stewart's mother and father and the three boys lived in that little tiny house. But then Len Dennings bought it once and built on some, and different people built on, and then it burned down, I think.
Well, sounds like everybody was during the Depression.
During the Depression, the welfare, they came a certain day in the week, the man came and went to interview these people that were needing help, and then they came in with a slip that they could get $5 or so much groceries. And we had a lot of the welfare people trade with us during the Depression.
Did you ever see some of these people that came out? And my parents had a grocery store in Idaho at that time, and they said they saw that here.
Had to take potatoes or chickens or anything that people had for sugar and flour and coffee, and of course tobacco.
What were people talking about because they were so poor? What did they blame it on?
They weren't having problems. They just went along like that was the way that life was. Like one lady told me one time, she says, I never knew when the Depression was. I was just as poor before as I was when it was here.
So there wasn't a lot of complaining, a lot of...
I don't know who didn't like him, but most of the people liked him because he started Social Security. And the only reason thing that I had against him was he brought the liquor back.
Uh-huh.
But my son said he did that because he won the tax. Sure. Tax on
great
the liquor.
Great thing to tax.
He traded with us, the Bruces. And
the Bruces.
And there are very few houses.
I don't think there's any.
Now that more than there was then. There's a few more houses, but not very many. Same old houses was there.
Now, why did Middleton just vanish from the face of the earth? That's a question people are going to want to know.
There was nothing to keep them when the automobiles came in, and they could go around other places. They didn't have any stores or any things. It was just a little community.
I see.
But those people came to Sherwood to do.
There were train people.
Tonquin was a bad deal. There was some real estate people in Portland that got these people to buy a little piece of land, and they tell them, you go out there and build your little house and raise you a garden and live forever. But that ground is no good. It's all rocks.
I see.
See, you know the gravel pits there, all that gravel stuff? That ground is no good. Those people just sat there and starved to death.
Is there any other I'm trying to think of these other communities. What about Scythe?
With us.
And what did they bring? Mostly onions and...
Well, they were in good shape. They always had money. All the Saraginos and all those Galbers and all those people down there, they always had money.
Well, they did. I remember Joe Galbers was always complaining.
They ever worried about any of their grocery bills. They always paid their grocery bills.
That's interesting. Level ground.
Well, there's not so much water. They need more rain, and they wasn't always getting rain. The lower land seemed to be get along better without rain than the hills.
Yeah, a Parrot Mountain up there.
Involved in that. I picked blueberries for holes. That was the regular schoolhouse. My son went to school in the third grade there, but that had all the grades in it, but it just had two rooms.
Uh-huh.
And then when he was ready to go to hand, Freddie worked in PWA. Then their money to squander like they do nowadays, they helped out with their own clothes and stuff. He could read the newspaper and he could drive his car. Beat us, but it causes a lot of other diseases.
Yeah, you can lose your legs and everything.
Makes your body so that it doesn't reject all these burns and stuff. Well, he hired Mr. Dahlke, Don Dahlke's father, to help him.
Oh,
and he worked with him for several years. Then he bought it in, so he was half owner until the passenger train was not here when I came.
Yeah.
But there was a freight train, and where the house is there on the corner when you cross the railroad track, there was a little station there, and there was a man there that worked in the station. But just shortly after we came here, they took that away, and the freight train stops here to get things from the cannery and stuff, but there's no station here anymore.
What did the man he lived?
Their house is the next house.
Oh, it's the next house. But he lived in that house, and that was the depot agent's house.
I can't.
The kids in high school.
I don't understand that you didn't have any money at all. I remember when I was a kid and I wrote a postal card to my cousin. Mother says, you can't mail that. You didn't write enough of a letter to mail that, and it only cost 2 cents.
Sure.
For a quarter in them days.
A penny was worth something.
Oh, yeah, pennies were worth money, but now you can find them laying in the street. When the cannery had wood to fire their engines to.
So we had somebody around here cutting trees.
Mother moved in and built that house over there. They had a farm out up Parrot Road there someplace. There was trees on their farm, and they had a big grocery bid for the money, and he sold the wood to the cannery.
I see.
I am not.
You sure would have missed any opportunities along the way. I think you mentioned that we kind of chased in.
It was planned to come through here, but they wouldn't. I don't know. Nowadays, they declare somebody's property is. They'll take it over anyway, but them days, I guess they had to have permission to build it because they made it go to Six Corners when it could have went right through Sherwood.
Were you here during that controversy? I forget when it took place.
Six Corners was already. Well, I am, maybe I'm a tool. Still had a little town here. We can't buy a spool of thread. We can't get it. Any medicine or anything here anymore.
That's right.
And it was a town than an antiques shop.
Yeah, antiques don't help you too much when you're living. Well,
antiques doesn't help the general public because they can't afford antiques, the ones that even want them. I don't want any antiques. That's all I've got is antiques. Thank God and go to church. Leave off the drinking and the dope and be honest. Kids are not taught to be honest anymore. Even their people teach them to tell stories. She built a fire in the back of her house to burn a lot of extra boxes because then we didn't have recycling. And she was afraid that it wasn't the day we were supposed to burn. So she says to the little girl, if the fireman comes along and asks you about that fire, tell him you didn't know it was there. Mm-hmm. That was plain out and out lie because she knew she helped her mother build a fire. Mm-hmm. Well, when I was a kid, my grandmother would not let us tell anything like for a joke even that wasn't the truth. If it wasn't the truth, we didn't tell it. And if we would even pick a flower in somebody's yard, she would say we were stealing. My grandmother was stricter than my own parents with me, and I spent a lot of time with my grandmother. So she very tight-knit family on my mother's side. My mother just had one sister, and every place that Grandma and Grandpa or my uncle and aunt wanted to go, we went too. We always lived close together. And my aunt had, I was the oldest of the four, and then she had a boy, and I was born in September. She had a boy in August. Then my brother was born in December. And then she had a little girl in June. So there was 3 years difference between them, but I was the oldest, and my cousin that I'm talking about in the Enterprise was the youngest. But we were together, like, we had the same kind of dresses. If Grandma bought a piece of material for one, she bought for both. And we were together on all holidays and lots of other times. And we played together and grew up together, and we were daughter that used to come and visit my people when they were still living down by Kelso. Cannery?
Yeah, I guess
yes.
It's hard to forget that.
Oh, that cannery, that was something really good for Sherwood. In the spring when it was time for the strawberries, they hired the children and the older people and ladies, just home ladies, you know, housekeeping ladies. And the children earned money to go to high school and help the families that the ladies could work in the cannery.
No,
I mean, it's kind of blurry.
Our editor needs to learn how to take pictures better. He tried to take that. I have to get a good... I have to bring my camera and take a black and white picture. These won't show up too well either.
For the paper.
Okay.
Button. On my... Okay.
It was very interesting.
Then you can take out the stuff you don't want to.
Well, I'll leave this here. These here. I'll take this one with me.
Okay.
That one you just gave me. because I think I'd like to get a, take that picture again with the blue ribbon and the tatting. What is tatting?
Tatting is that doily I showed you.
It's very intricate work.
Well,
is that one on the chair there too?
I have this.
Right.
This around your hand, like, see, you have to make that loop go over the, come to the top. If it don't, it'll be a knot and it won't be any good.
So it's just that one
now,
little
now
tool.
That's the stitch. Mm-hmm. You put it through here and see that goes over top. Then you have to make a half one to make a stitch.
Pretty useful in this sort of thing, but it's entirely different, isn't it?
Yeah, well, this is the, well, I do crocheting too, but other people, not very many people make tatting. I sell these for $10. Carrie sold me $70 worth last Christmas time at her school where she teaches.
Oh, really? Well, how is tatting a new art, or is it something?
No, it's ancient.
That tool, this is that one little tool. It's shaped like a teardrop. And it's got a roll of thread in it?
Yeah, well, you have to wind the thread around to put it
in between those two pieces.
Then when you make these straight pieces like this, you take an extra string and put it around your hand. Then you use the shuttle on this extra string.
That's called a shuttlecock, isn't it?
Yeah, and that makes them little straight pieces.
Well, it's beautiful work. It's nice. It's symmetrical.
Starch this one. I put spray starch on them to make it stay in place good.
Is that one there on the chair? Is that one, or is that?
Oh no, that's crocheted.
Yeah, that's crocheted. Okay. We'll be back about the same time tomorrow.
Yeah, I think so.
What do you do for the rest of the day here? It's going to get kind of hot.
You mean I'm busy always.
You're always busy?
I'm busy when I don't do that. I'm going someplace or somebody comes and takes me to town.
Your grandson going to be here?
He lives in Tacoma.
Oh.
And
how many grandchildren do you have?
I got a boy and a girl. And I got 4 great-grandchildren.
I see. How old is your grandson?
How old is my grandson?
Yeah.
40.
Oh. Well, if he's here, maybe we can get him in on the picture.
Maybe I could show you some pictures of my children when you come again.
Okay. Okay, well, you can, I'm almost out of tape here. I'm gonna, it's gonna click off.
Well, you can't put all of that stuff I talked about in the paper.
Well, it was very interesting.
Make a whole paper.
we'll do something here.
That's what I got, was on
the
car.
Yeah, I was gonna ask about that, too. How Vad is Vad Woodhouse was Grand Marshal with you?
Yeah.
And how old is she?
I don't know.
Is she related to Woody?
She's Woody's wife.
Woody's wife.
She's not as old as I am.
Oh,